People of faith by the millions are struggling with dogmatic, ill-fitting religion. Some were born into traditions that no longer comport with their core values and beliefs. Others identify in ways that result condemnation and rejection of their very essence as human beings and spiritual beings. Still others retain membership in denominations that have drifted alarmingly from past teachings and tenets to embrace a far-right political and partisan ideology at the expense of Scripture. Now, what these and many other people share is disaffection at best and profound wounding at worst. And while a perfectly reasonable decision in the face of toxic religion is to walk away from faith entirely, this is neither a viable nor healing choice for many. To the growing and priceless body of writings on leaving rigid, exclusionary religion without abandoning faith is an excellent new book titled The Shift, Surviving and Thriving After Moving from Conservative to Progressive Christianity. And I am excited to welcome the author, Pastor Colby Martin, to State of Belief Radio. Colby, welcome.
Well, thank you. That's good to be here. And by being here, I mean being quarantined in my home while you're quarantined in yours. But it's good to be virtually here with you.
Well, we're shut in by a lot of things, but we're free to talk as we wish about religion and about your new book. Mm. Would you start by describing who you wrote this book for? And who would you expect to get the most out of it?
Yeah, I loved in your setup there, in your intro, the way you articulated that for so many people, there is something that they are leaving. And then, of course, there's also some that are more forcefully being shown the door. But there are people that are leaving something that has it could be religious beliefs. It could be religious practice. In my book, and as you talked about, it has a more conservative theological bent to it, but they're leaving something because something no longer works there. Something no longer fits. I talk about the clothes of conservative Christianity no longer fitting. And yet, as you said, they're not leaving altogether. The proverbial baby with the bathwater, which I am so tired of that metaphor, but it is so helpful because we all sort of instantly get it, like, oh yeah, there's something worth preserving. And so the audience that I held in mind as I worked on this manuscript were the faces and the names that I've interacted with over the last 5 or 6 years, really, in my ministry, who have said, I can no longer accept many of the beliefs that I grew up with, or the ideas of God that were handed to me, or the ideas of humanity, and yet I can't walk away from some sort of thing behind the thing. That there's something deeper, there's something more going on than the flesh and the blood and the pizza and the popcorn and the Netflix. There's something more going on here. And so what I've tried to do is I've tried to say, in that experience of people who have left a more conservative expression of their religion and are finding something that I call more progressive or more open, more inclusive, that journey, that experience, there seems to be so many common phenomenons that show up in there of fear. Like, what am I doing? What have I left? Nothing's tethering me anymore. Chaos of nothing seems to make sense anymore. So much loneliness. And I'm sure you've come across this where they've lost their tribe. They've lost their church. They've lost their family. And so in many ways, this book, to get to your question, is written to those who are trying to hold on to something real and true while letting everything else go. And they're discovering that that is hard to do. This is like my survival guide that says you can still have a thriving faith even as you leave your more conservative Christianity behind you.
Mm. Colby, you write with the passion of personal experience. What's your church background, and where has your journey taken you?
So I call myself a recovering Baptist. I was born and raised into a many generations deep Baptist family. After my parents divorced, then the Baptist church, you know, didn't really know what to do with a single mom and three kids. And that was just awkward for everybody. And so we left the Baptist church and found a kind of general, generic evangelical church. But then when it came time to college, and I knew that I wanted to give my life to the work of ministry, I found the college nearby that was, lo and behold, a Baptist college. And so I spent 4 years back in the Baptist world studying conservative Baptist theology and Baptist heritage and getting my degree in pastoral ministry. After graduating from college, then I joined a Christian Missionary Alliance church as a worship and arts pastor. And so I spent, you know, years of growing up in conservative religion with sort of an evangelical Baptist context, and then my college years. And then after college, I worked in for about 6 years in two different large evangelical churches. And so I know that world well. And this is part of why I feel like in some ways, if people are reading The Shift and they are experiencing this moving out of conservative, they're gonna know that I know that what they know, if that makes sense. Like, I'm trying to write saying like, no, I know all the usual go-tos, and I know the pain that you're experiencing, and I know the fear, and I know the anxiety that comes up when you wake up in the middle of the night and be like, whoa, I don't know what I think about Jesus anymore. I know how scary that is. So yeah, that's a bit of my background there.
Let me ask you this. Were there times on your pilgrimage when you considered just packing it in and walking away from the ministry and maybe faith itself entirely? Did you go down that road too?
I don't know how far down that road I've gone, but that road has presented itself to me a number of times, and especially as it relates to the church world. I write about in the book briefly. I touch on how I was fired from two churches in a matter of 2 years, one for theological reasons and then one because I didn't fit into the culture there. And yet the very next thing I do is my wife and I then start a church, which seems a little counterintuitive. My best friend texts me. He's like, what are you doing? Like, have you not learned anything? I'm like, I don't know that I have. Or I've learned everything and I realize I can't walk away from this. But I think what I'm discovering now is it's not so much that road to walk away. I don't feel so much as calling me anymore or enticing me or tempting me, but it's more like, oh, that road is really just a part of a larger road of what it means to be a person who is seeking growth and transformation and trying to be open to the possibility of what is. That road is just part of a larger stream of what it means to be a person who's seeking after the divine. So it's not even about walking away from anything as it is about transcending the things that no longer make sense, but including the things that do and keeping those things close to my heart.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I ask that question because there are so many people that struggle with the very kinds of options that we're talking about. And some of them go another direction. You, it sounds like to me, always had a sense that there's something here that you want to have and you just don't have it yet. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah. No, I think you're picking up on that. Especially as it relates to, if I go back to church for a minute, just as a tangible example, I realize that the church is incredibly flawed. And yet, how is that any different from any other environment where humans are trying to build relationships and do community? the church really isn't unique insofar as relationships are hard and messy and complicated, and doing life in any sort of authentic or honest way means you're going to be rubbing up against people's pain, and they're going to be pushing against your baggage, and all that's going to happen whether there's a cross outside the church or not. But what I've found in specifically faith community is I've found a sense of belonging and connection that has allowed me to better know myself and to better understand who I am. And it's allowed me to connect more with God. It's allowed me to connect more with others. I really think, as broken as she is, the church still holds this incredible potential to be a source of growth and transformation and healing and peace for the world. And so as much as it has tried to push me away, I keep saying, no, I think there's something there. There's something to this coming together over these shared values that I haven't been able to walk away from. And I've seen that in our church that my wife and I started 6 years ago. I've seen people come in with incredible wounds from past religious experiences, from past churches, from past religious leaders, and they come, and it's almost like, look, I'll give this whole church enterprise one last shot, and based on your website, maybe this might be the place. But if this doesn't work out, it's not going to work out anyway. And I just say, yeah, no, that makes sense. I get it. And what we have found is people, if they can be open to it, can find incredible healing from their past religious wounds and from their past spiritual trauma. And sometimes that happens best in the context of church. It's kind of like how talk therapy works in many ways, because you relive some of those traumatic experiences in a safe environment with your therapist, and your brain starts to wire new pathways to new emotional experiences. And it's not because you run away from your trauma that you get healed from it, but it's because you lean into it in a safe environment. And in many ways, that's how our church tries to function. I don't know if that answered your question. Sorry, I get kind of excited about the world of church occasionally.
I understand. Let me be confessional. You may or may not know that I myself spent years in leadership positions within the Southern Baptist Convention before finding it necessary to leave. Okay, the church was lurching in a hyper-political, hyper-partisan direction that increasingly had nothing to do with the word and everything to do with power, and I mean earthly power. In the end, I won't say it was a difficult decision, but it was an incredibly difficult series of steps and sacrifices on the way. Can you recall what the hardest part of this progress was for you?
Yeah, I would say, so two things come up for me in that. One is the loss of deep, meaningful relationships. Because there's something that happens in human communities when you bind together over shared belief and or shared enemy, which, you know, well, it's true in any social circle, but in conservative religious communities, that's often a real binding agent, is having a common enemy. But common belief binds you as well. And in my churches and in my school communities and even in my own family, when I started to question some of the long-held assumptions about what is true as it relates to God, Jesus, Bible, humanity, etc., that elicits a lot of fear, as I am 100% certain that you know what I'm talking about. That elicits a lot of fear because people are operating under the assumption that the most important thing to God, the most important thing to the creator of the universe, is what the ideas that we have in between our ears. So somehow along the way, we have picked up this idea that the thing that God cares most about is our beliefs, what we think, and that our standing with the divine, therefore, is dependent on ideas in our head. And so when you start to ask questions around that, or when you start to be honest that you can no longer accept those, suddenly your very standing with God in your own heart, because of the way these messages have been put inside of you in your own heart, you question, well, oh, shoot, am I no longer okay with God? But the fear that happens in your community and in your family is tangible as people not only get concerned about you, but then get concerned for your impact on others and how you might then get them to, you know, the number of times I have been called a wolf in sheep's clothing is kind of, it's kind of harrowing, to be honest with you. But that comes with the territory. I get it. But yeah. I think that was the hardest part, and it still rings, you know, still haunts me today to think about the communities that I'm blacklisted from. You know, I mentioned my Baptist college earlier. I used to be one of their sort of darling golden alumni that they would love to bring back and speak in chapel and sort of say, hey, look at this success story. And, you know, now I don't even think they want me to acknowledge that I went to their school. It's because I have sort of done almost a 180 on so many of the beliefs I used to hold. And that elicits a lot of fear. And the fear then causes people to reject you out of the community for all sorts of reasons that I understand, but that are still deeply painful.
Colby, you get to a point where a lot of what you've been told are places never to go in thinking, and you find yourself right there. Thinking, and should I do that? Should I stop right now rather than go ahead? Did you experience that, and what kept you going?
Yeah. Oh, I experienced it. I experienced it. As I mentioned a few moments ago, I bought hook, line, and sinker the idea that my beliefs were the most important thing to God, and to consider altering those in any way was to therefore threaten my very sense of well-being. And I think what's helped me, and I try to, I have one chapter. So for the chapters in the book, I try to tackle some of the common theological obstacles that people face when they're on this journey. The book isn't about deconstruction. I'm not saying how to take apart your beliefs. And it's not even really about reconstruction. The point not even is to say, well, then here are the things that you should believe. This isn't a how to become a progressive Christian. I'm more interested in that liminal space, the transitional space, the journey of what it's like to leave a thing that brought you so much security and comfort and you knew, and to be going towards something that really is unknown, but seems to be sort of still calling out to you. And what has helped me immensely in that. And so I mentioned the four chapters that deal with some of the common theological obstacles, such as what to do when the ideas of God no longer make sense to you, what to do with the Bible, this dusty old book that we used to think one thing about. Now, what do we do? The person of Jesus, how does that fit into this? And then the church. And I go to so to answer your question or to respond, I go to the chapter on Jesus. And the thing that has helped me so much to be liberated from this what I call this oppressive idea, really, that the most important thing to God is what you believe. What has helped me immensely is to listen to Jesus, the number of times that he seemed almost disinterested in what his followers believed about him. He really didn't seem to care who they thought he was. In fact, the few times when people even made these confessions of, oh, I think you are the Christ, I think you are the Messiah, Jesus's response was, well, okay, don't tell anybody. Like, if that's what you think, that's totally great and all, but keep that to yourself. And so my point is he wasn't concerned that what people believed about him. His focus in his heart was that people believed him. And by that, I mean believed when he said, no, the way of mercy is better than sacrifice. The way of forgiveness is better than revenge. The way of love is better than hate. Like, believe me that this is the way. This is the way to eternal life, abundant life, life to the full. And so to respond to your question, what I hope is helpful to people is if, because for many, again, we're talking about Christians here who have left a conservative world, Jesus and Jesus's words often still matter greatly. So if I can take them right to Jesus and say, what if Jesus himself was giving you a permission slip to relax a little bit on your anxiety of getting all the beliefs right? What if it's not about getting the beliefs right? What if it's about, as Jesus said, they will know you are my followers in this, that you love one another. And I know how woo-woo liberal leftist that sounds to those who are, that's how it sounded to me when I was in college and after college. It can't just be all about love. But Jesus sure seemed to think that that was the thing that mattered most, at least more than correct belief. So I think that's been a big help for me, is to go actually back to the person of Jesus and get this permission slip to be okay if the beliefs aren't correct.
Yeah. There are faithful activists who continue to advocate for more inclusivity and openness, even in the more conservative faith traditions. A young pastor in your city, actually, Brandon Robertson, was asked to leave the Southern Baptist Conference 3 years ago for publicly advocating for inclusion of LGBTQI persons in the life of the church. More broadly, is there a role for those who choose to remain but to work for change despite the odds?
I want to be careful how I answer this. I think if I take a step back and respond to that from a larger sort of value-based perspective, one of my core values is that it takes all sorts of approaches and all sorts of people and many different methods to sort of approach something as deeply rooted as like a systemic injustice that you're talking about, exclusion of LGBTQ people from the church. It takes many different approaches and many different. So my bigger value wants to respond and say, yes, there is absolutely, it is imperative that we have people at every, you know, every stage in the process, people fighting from the inside, from the outside. I 100% my value wants to say, yes. But then I have a conflict in values as it relates around this topic specifically, because my experience has been that not only does that tend to not work very well, meaning I've seen people that have stayed in non-affirming churches far too long because the story they tell themselves is, no, I'm here to help make change. I'm here to help build bridges. The story they tell themselves is that they have to be there to be a part of that process. And it breaks my heart, the statistics on that, which are, well, at least in my experience and interactions with people, is the number of times that actually makes a difference is just so small, so small. Where on the flip side, I have yet to interact mostly with, I'm talking about pastors who have either left their church because their church wouldn't become affirming and they are, or tried to take their whole church affirming and it ended up, you know, unraveling most of the community. I've never met a pastor yet who said, oh man, I really wish I would have waited on that. No, every single one says, I wish I would have done that sooner. As hard as it was, as painful it was, I wish I would have either left sooner or taken my church through the affirming process sooner. Meaning there is, on the outside of that sort of oppressive kind of, I got to keep all my beliefs secret because it's not safe to talk about them. On the outside of that, there's a freedom and liberty that once people get a taste of, they're like, oh, this is what freedom is. And so, yeah, that's why I say my bigger value is, yeah, like it takes everybody in all different parts. But really, I think on this particular issue, and I say this in the book, actually, if you as a person of faith still wants to be invested in a local church body and you yourself are what I call open and affirming of LGBTQ people, then I feel like your larger obligation and responsibility to LGBTQ people is to be a part of an affirming church and maybe realize that it's not, you're just not going to win the battle if you stay in your church. You just won't. And I know that sounds pessimistic, and I know there's a few examples here and there where that really did matter. But yeah, so I don't know if you can sense my conflict there in those two values, but that's how I kind of sit with that topic.
Well, I do, and part of the reason that I understand what you're saying is, one, I experienced it myself, but also I grew up in a tradition in which guilt was a positive thing, and feeling like you were being punished because you were a Christian, that seemed to be good. And so when someone does what you did, and I think what you've just said to other people is one of the best pieces of advice that you've given, is you get to another place and you say, my God, this is about freedom. This is about growth. And why did I wait so long to come
That's
here?
Right.
Yeah. Well, listen, I got one more question. I've got a whole bunch of more questions, but I'm going to ask you one more. Through the years, I found myself facing the same sorts of questions that we've been talking about around interfaith activism that also come when talking about inclusive religion. Aren't you, and that you know the question, aren't you just reducing faith to the lowest common denominator here and selling out really Christianity? I've got my answer to how that question is ought to be responded, but I'd love to hear yours.
Yeah. So the image that comes to mind is a set of binoculars. So our house sits right up against a mountain. Well, in San Diego, we call it a mountain, which is kind of an adorable name for it for the most of the world. It's really a hill, but we call it a mountain here. And we have a pair of binoculars that we often use to look out and see hikers and owls and coyotes. And when you made that comment about, isn't it just reducing? Immediately I thought, well, that's one way to look at it. That really is, like, I respect that is how some people look at it, that you're just reducing it to this sort of lowest common denominator. But what if, like, a pair of binoculars, because you look through one side of it and you're going to make everything super tiny, right? If you look through it backwards, everything is going to be really, really small. But another way to look at it is to just turn those binoculars around. Look out the other way, and suddenly everything is so much bigger and more expansive. And so I sympathize with those who feel like this is just a reduction to the smallest thing. But for me, and I imagine for you as well, it feels like an expansion. What if the world is even bigger and more beautiful and more complex than you could even imagine? And what if it's no surprise that the enlightened historical teachers of all these different religions were tapping into so many of the same ideas and insights into what it means to be human. And so for me, it's more about an expansion to see that all of this belongs, that everything somehow is beautifully connected. And so I don't know if that made sense, but for me, it's more like, flip those binoculars around. You can look at it one way, but I think it's just as possible. And for me, it's been far more fruit-bearing to look at it the other way.
Along with his wife, Kate, Pastor Colby Martin is co-founder of Sojourn Grace Collective in San Diego, California, and the author of Unclobber, Rethinking Our Misuse of the Bible on Homosexuality. His latest book comes out on Tuesday, but you can pre-order it right now. The title is The Shift, Surviving and Thriving After Moving from Conservative to Progressive Christianity. Colby, it's been wonderful talking with you today. We could go on and on. You've got a story that needs to be told, and I'm glad you're telling it. Thanks for what you're redoing, and thank you for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
It's been a joy. Thank you, Dr. Welton. And you do incredible work. Thank you so much. It is needed, and it is good. Thank you.